Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Robots Radio presents...
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast. I will be your host this week. My name is Sergio, and we are going to deep dive into some juicy, meaty D&D lore. A little bit of housekeeping before we get started. Unfortunately, my co-host Crit is taking a personal leave of absence from the show. It's nothing, there's no like Shakespearean power play going on. It's simply like he's got some stuff going on, some personal stuff going on. And unfortunately, the D&D Lorecast has to step aside from the D&D Lorecast. He's still around though. He's still doing his own shows, the Fumbling Four, the Cyberpunk Red live play cast. All of them, and they're all in the show notes. And you know, I will go through them at the end of the show as well. And of course, he's still active on the Robots Radio Network Discord. And so, if you want to talk to him, he's still available. He's still out there. But for the time being, unfortunately, he's not going to be on the D&D Lorecast, and we'll all miss him. And we eagerly await his return. In the meantime, I will be here providing all the lore and deep dives that you've come to know and expect from the D&D Lorecast. And that's exactly what we're going to do this week and next week and into the future. So this week, what do we have in store this week? Well, in D&D, you have all sorts of famous PCs. Like D&D is full of famous NPCs. And we have been covering many of them over the past 2 years that the show has been around, whether it be heroes of literature like Dritz or epic villains with their own setting and campaign built around them like Strahd. These characters are the foundation of much of the lore in a very macro sense. But they're also fleshing out the world in a very micro sense. So these characters are responsible for not just like big picture, but also like the fine details. One of those characters is Xanathar, who you may probably recognize from the official book, Xanathar's Guide to Everything. And this is from that book. This is in the intro to Xanathar's Guide to Everything. Beneath the bustling city of Waterdeep, a beholder crime lord keeps tabs on everyone and everything, or so the beholder thinks. Known as Xanathar, this bizarre being believes it can gather information on everything in the Dungeons & Dragons multiverse. The beholder desires to know it all, but no matter what the beholder learns and what it treasures and what treasures it acquires, its most prized possession in all the multiverse remains its goldfish, Silgar. Okay, so simply based on this, we know a few things. We know one, Xanathar is a beholder. We know two, it is a crime lord. in the Forgotten Realm city of Waterdeep? We know three, it values knowledge and is preoccupied, almost obsessed with stockpiling it, with acquiring it and using it. It believes knowledge is power. And finally, four, and perhaps most importantly, it loves a goldfish named Silgar. Okay, so maybe that's not the most important thing, but you never know when a detail like that could come in handy. But these details do not a biography make. So you may be asking yourself, who is Xanathar? And how did this beholder make its way to the top of the Thieves Guild in Waterdeep? And as we will later learn, also Skullport. Well, asking who is, that's the wrong question for now. Right now, let's not focus on who is Xanathar, but what? Because in fact, Xanathar is not a name, but a title. In real life, think Dalai Lama, a title given to each consecutive successor, or in the Forgotten Realms, Zulkir, which is a title of power awarded to a select few among the Red Wizards of Thay. So the title of Xanathar is now a title assumed by each of the beholders who have been in charge of the Thieves Guild going on some 150 odd years now. So now that we know that, now that we know that the Xanathar is officially a title given to the head of the Thieves Guild, now is the time to ask who, because the name Xanathar is also simply not a title. At least it wasn't always just a title. It was, in fact, the actual name of a beholder, the original head of the Waterdeep Thieves Guild, before he was betrayed and murdered. I wish I had that dun 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 sound clip to go there. Okay, so the original Xanathar, the OG Xanathar classic. The history of the original Xanathar, and in fact, the Xanathar's Thieves Guild itself begins thusly. And this is from Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Villains Lore Book. The last open or official Thieves Guild in Waterdeep was dismantled by the lords of the city years ago. This act didn't end all illegal activities in the City of Splendors. It did push the surviving thieving activities even further underground and left them without any form of leadership. Eventually, most of these quote-unquote freelance operations were brought under the clandestine leadership of the first Xanathar. This beholder wove enough webs of deceit about itself that few of the thieves working for him knew that they labored and risked their lives for an eye tyrant. So that's very interesting, because only those of a certain, let's say, a reputation, only those of a certain reputation would have even heard of the Xanathar. And then even a smaller group of that. So you have this small group that even would have heard of the Xanathar in the first place. And then you have an even smaller group within that small group. Even less of those actually knew of its true identity. Its true identity being that of a beholder that was known to work closely with the Zentarim, also known as the Black Network. In fact, Xanathar was one of many beholders allied with the Zets. Xanathar would aid these evil wizards, priests, rogues, and warriors in their goal of attaining total dominance and rulership of all Faerun. Xanathar came to Waterdeep as cargo. Now, that's an important distinction, so definitely remember that. Arrives in Waterdeep as cargo in a caravan coming from Zentil Keep. And upon entering the City of Splendors, Xanathar sensed a power vacuum amongst its less esteemed denizens, let's put it that way, to put it nicely and diplomatically, and sensed this power vacuum and sought to fill it. And this is from Advanced Dungeons and Dragons Hall of Heroes. Xanathar loves his position as the secret lord of Waterdeep's criminal underground. His great pleasure is chuckling over the vanity of the lords of Waterdeep, who think they have eradicated organized crime in the city while he prospers in the sewers beneath their feet. All right, so in addition to Xanathar's principal goal being to maintain the position of crime lord within the city, that's beyond everything else, that it wants to stay where it's at. It wants to maintain it, that prestige. Xanathar also does enjoy the perks of the job, which include finely prepared foods, scented oils, spiced tobaccos and herbs. They're all at its beck and call. So it's no surprise that the beholder isn't eager to give all that up. Hall of Heroes goes on to say, quote, besides avoiding the scrutiny of the lords of Waterdeep, Xanathar is keeping himself from common knowledge because he doesn't want his former masters of the Zhentarim to know where he is. Now, this is really interesting because if you remember when I spoke on Xanathar's arrival in Waterdeep, the beholder was described as cargo. So its presence in the city doesn't seem like it was all that voluntary. At least that's the implication. Now, Hall of Heroes seemingly confirms this by revealing Xanathar's goal while in Waterdeep was to essentially topple its governments, its rule, its governing authority, which would be the Lords of Waterdeep, so that a new ruler could come to power, one which would be more friendly toward the Zhentarim. So essentially, Xanathar is sent as a subject of the Zents to perform a task. Xanathar is working for them rather than with them, it seems like. To quote from Hall of Heroes, however, after a couple of months of conspiracy and lurking about the shadows of the docks, the free market atmosphere of Waterdeep inspired Xanathar, and he defied his masters by disappearing from their view. Xanathar is now the master of the unofficial Thieves Guild of Waterdeep. He works solely through freelancers who receive orders indirectly. Only his most trusted lieutenants have any idea that Xanathar exists or is a beholder. He has not left his hideout for years, allowing his lieutenants to supply all of his needs. The lords of Waterdeep have no idea that there is an eye tyrant within 200 miles of their city. So Xanathar runs the Thieves Guild from this luxurious as a sewer can get, I suppose. But then again, the Ninja Turtles always made it seem like not that bad. There definitely wasn't a lot of, human waste floating around. It seemed like this sort of modern exposed brick New York loft sort of thing. Anyway, I digress. So Xanathar runs the Thieves Guild from this luxurious, opulent chamber in the sewers underneath Waterdeep, never leaving, never exposing himself beyond its four lieutenants or counselors. Now, the four lieutenants are Slan Thurbel, who is considered the leader of the four, Slink Montescore, who is the bookkeeper and the gatherer of information. Then there's Ott Steeltoes, who is the muscle, more or less. And finally, there is Dark Eyes, a half-drow thief who specializes in blackmail and extortion. So the original Xanathar shows up to Waterdeep essentially in the employ and that's probably putting it nicely. In more or less, Xanathar may have been a slave of the Zents, arrives in Waterdeep with the mission to topple its government, to topple the lords of Waterdeep, so that a new authority can take power, one that's going to be more friendly toward the Zentarim. Instead, Xanathar goes into business for himself, escapes the watchful eye of the Zents, and begins to form a new thieves guild in the sewers underneath the City of Splendor. Now, if that isn't the American dream, then I don't know what is. I mean, take Ellis Island instead of Waterdeep, and an immigrant coming in from through the Statue of Liberty and making a name for themselves. Xanathar is an American hero. That's how I look at it. Anyway, maybe I'm just being wacky. So everything seems to be going fine. That is until the watchful eye of Skullport takes glance at Waterdeep. And we will discuss that when we come back from the middle of the show. Hello and welcome to the middle of the show. This is where we like to take a chance, just relax, just kick back a little, unwind from the lore seeking that we have done and the lore seeking that we have yet to do. We also like to take the middle of the show as an opportunity to thank our patrons, our Patreon patrons who financially support the show at patreon.com/dndlorecast. This week, I would like to, in particular, shout out our scholar patrons. For only $10 a month, our scholar patrons get ad-free early episodes, bonus episodes, a sticker pack, plus a tier-exclusive sticker. Remington Cloutier is actually our oldest patron, and we want to thank Remington for their continued support for over a year and a half. In addition to Remington, we also have Wolf the Sheepdog, The Dog Indie, and Darkwing MT at the Scholar tier. Thank you so much for helping us, for believing in us, and for spending your hard-earned gold on making this show bigger and better. If you are interested in supporting the show in such a manner, like I said, you can go to patreon.com/dndlorecast. We have tiers as low as $5 all the way up to $100, each of them with cool, unique perks that we think are pretty cool. I mean, there's stuff when Crit and I were putting them together, we thought, if we were on the other side of the microphone, what kind of stuff would we be excited about? What kind of stuff would we want? And that's exactly how we try to build the Patreon. If you want to support the show, but you're not in a position to be able to do that through Patreon, you can still absolutely do so by continuing to listen, continuing to bump up the numbers. I get the nice little serotonin endorphin rush whenever I see the, how many fellow D&D nerds are out there that want to hear this stuff, because my wife can't be the only one that I talk to about this. She's going to lose her mind eventually, but bless her heart, she lets me ramble on about goblins and ghouls and wizards and liches and Draculas. You can also leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. And of course, recommending us to anyone you think might enjoy the show is, more than enough. We're very humbled by any modicum of support that you give to us. It's more than we could ever ask for. So we thank you for listening. Thank you for any kind of support that you show us. The middle of the show is also where we like to spotlight something off the DMs Guild. We're nothing if not homebrew fanatics here at the D&D Lorecast. Well, we do love all the official Wizards of the Coast stuff. One of the best parts about D&D is that you can absolutely make it your own. You can create something that's based off of something official, sort of like a tweak or have some sort of modification, or you can create something all your own. And, you know, so we like to highlight that sort of stuff, especially on the DMs Guild. And usually it's something that is connected to the theme somehow, is what I like to do. And this week is no different. This week, we're going to talk about Xanathar's lost notes to everything else. And this book was put together by it's a murderer's row of DMs Guild talent. You've got Lisa Chen, you've got Jame Introcaso, you've got Cindy Moore, Shane Merwin. These are names that if you are on the DMs Guild for any amount of time checking out homebrew stuff, these names should appear, you know, familiar to you. Xanathar's Lost Notes to Everything Else is over 80 pages of full color art. You know, it looks and reads and feels just like an official book. It's immaculately put together. It says that it's a massive collaboration of DMs, Guild adepts that expands the options for players and dungeon masters presented in the D&D core rulebooks and supplements. This source book provides a plethora of scribbles, scrolls, and schemes curated by Balathemp Geddam's protege, Aladair, pilfered from Xanathar prior to the publication of his Guide to Everything, presented in the Crime Syndicate's unique style, including a high-fashion collector's cover. The DMs Guild Adepts bring you new player options, including subclasses for every class, backgrounds, magic items, a race, DM rules options, and an adventure. It's, like I said, it's a very well put together book. One of the cool things that really stood out to me was its lingering injuries sub-rules, like rule set, where instead of just, you know, getting hurt, losing HP during battle, you can actually extend that throughout the campaign, and perhaps your character loses an eye or loses a hand in battle. Does like something happens that continues on. It also has expanded sanity and corruption rules, which if you're dealing with the aforementioned Vecna, who we have been talking about for the last couple of weeks, or any kind of mind flayer, that kind of sanity and corruption rule set is something that you could implement very easily into your campaign. It's available on the DMs Guild as a PDF for $19.95, or you can get a physical copy, a soft cover physical copy, plus the PDF for $39.95. I just got reprints for my birthday of AD&D First Edition, Dungeon Master's Guide, Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, Unearth Arcana. And I can speak from experience, the print on demand quality for Dungeon Masters Guild is fantastic. I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to look, but the books are fantastic. I just love seeing them on my bookcase. Of course, a link to the book will be provided in the show notes. So definitely check it out. I own it. I love it. I think you will love it too. We also want to remind everyone of the raffle that we are currently hosting. It is for 8 D&D 5th edition books, including the core rulebook gift set that is the Monster Manual, the Player's Handbook, and the Dungeon Master's Guide that comes with the DM screen inside of a slipcase, plus Xanathar's Guide to Everything, Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, Mordekainen's Tome of Foes, Bolo's Guide to Monsters, and Fizbin's Treasury of Dragons. All these books are available to win. One ticket costs $4. 3 tickets cost $10. You can buy them via PayPal or Venmo or Cash App. All 3 links are available in the show notes. 100% of the proceeds go to the Critical Role Foundation. They do excellent work. It's a fantastic charity, and we want to raise as much money for them and also give some stuff out in the process. So buy some tickets. We will be continuing this raffle through the month of May, through the month of June, and we will be, and through the month of July, and we will be announcing a winner during the August 7th show. So like I said, the links to buy tickets are available in the show notes. This money is going to go to a good cause, so definitely check it out. And yeah. So with that being said, let us continue on to the end of the show. Welcome to the end of the show. When we last left off, Xanathar the Beholder had come into Waterdeep and established a thieves guild, and seemingly all was well and good, except for one thing. Mo money, mo problems. Biggie Smalls taught us that. And with all that new wealth and all that new power, Xanathar was about to get a few new problems as well. And these problems stem all the way back to about 150 years before Xanathar even arrives in Waterdeep, inside of a caravan, or as part of a caravan, as part of a plot to topple the city's government. 150 years before that, another beholder began accumulating power within the city of Skullport. This beholder is actually an elder orb, a very old and very powerful form or type of eye tyrant, who have lost their eyes, but gain, they're like little like eye stems, but gain newfound sorcerous abilities instead. So elder orbs are actually immortal despite their seemingly older, more wrinkled appearance. Now, this particular elder orb was named Kirukeskai, and Kirukeskai arrived in Skullport in 1205 DR, hailing from the Gray Peaks Hive. And already an established slaver in his own right, Kirukeskai was seeking a greater market to set up shop. He wanted to expand the business, essentially. That's what every businessman, that's what every captain of industry desires, is to get bigger and better and more wealthy and more powerful. And Kirukeskai is no different. It's no different than your Rockefellers or what have you. He did just this, just that, and in keeping with the beholder's sneaky, tricksy ways, slowly began reorganizing the business so that it would essentially operate on its own. As the eye, as the elder orb would be most popularly known as, was doing this, it began spreading rumors of its own retirement or even its own demise, so that within a century, within not even 100 years, the agents of the eye, as his slaving ring was known as, became one of the largest, if not the largest, in all the city. And this is all without any kind of known association to any kind of beholder. Now, this is interesting because the similarities between how the eye started operations in Skullport is very similar to how Xanathar started operations in the Waterdeep Thieves Guild. They weren't out in the open. They weren't flamboyant about, you know, who they were or what their intentions were. They stuck to the shadows. They didn't want too many people knowing that a beholder, that an eye tyrant, was in charge of things. And so it is in fact these similarities which catch the eye's attention. Like I said, already wanting to expand its business and increase its power and influence, the eye began investigating the Thieves Guild as a way to possibly either work together or eventually take it over. And while doing this investigation, the eye discovered these small details which only a beholder would recognize. Essentially, game recognized game. There were certain things that only a beholder would do, and as such, only a beholder would recognize in the way that Xanathar was operating his Thieves Guild business. And so the eye eventually learned that the leader of the Thieves Guild was a beholder just like himself, a beholder named Xanathar, and the eye quickly made plans to usurp him. So there, and here is where the lore gets a little muddy. There are three different stories, and as far as how the original Xanathar and how Kirukeskai meet their demise, and it's hard to determine which is tied to which. There's only really one that that could go either way. One is very much tied to Xanathar, one is very much tied to Kirukeskai, and there's one that actually could be about either one of them because of the Xanathar title, because eventually Kato Keskai takes over that name as a title of the Thieves Guild leader, it's hard to distinguish if it's the original Xanathar or merely another beholder with that title. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to lay them all out, and then we'll suss them out at the end. So, okay. So this is from the Skullport sourcebook. Some time ago, the Eye displaced and killed the true Xanathar, the former beholder leader of the extremely covert Thieves Guild of Waterdeep. The Eye tricked another beholder named Uth into attacking Xanathar in the sewers below Waterdeep. Once Xanathar defeated Uth, the Eye moved in, destroyed the weakened Xanathar, and absorbed his operations. The Eye kept the original's name, only altering it slightly to the title of the Xanathar. So, pretty straightforward. The Eye replaces Xanathar and tells the former Thieves Guild leaders, former minions, that the Xanathar is actually a title. And those that the Eye was able to, it persuaded via charm spells. And those it could not were handled in a much less diplomatic fashion with death rays. So you either fell in line or you essentially fell off the face of the earth. But because the Eye essentially kept the Thieves Guild operating business as usual, most of Xanathar's former employee agreed to stay on and serve it. I mean, if it ain't broke, you're not going to reinvent the wheel, like why should we bother moving on? In fact, the transition was so seamless that outside of the aforementioned four lieutenants or counselors, as they're also known as, really no one realized that a power coup had even taken place. Like I said, the Eye was so good at making the transition from Xanathar to himself so seamless that if you didn't know any better, you wouldn't know that anything ever even happened. So now that's the story that you will find if you go digging into old campaign setting guides and source books. But there is an alternate version of how Xanathar was killed, and it is found in the Eye of the Beholder video game, which was released for PC and Super Nintendo and Sega CD, among other systems, way back in 1991. So this is the plot of the game from the box. Darkness has engulfed the town of Waterdeep, and legend has it that the criminal conspiracy behind it is hiding in the sewers. The locks and the traps in the twisting labyrinth beneath Waterdeep are too good, and skeletons and kobolds lurk around every corner. Who could be at the heart of this evil, and can anyone survive to find out? That evil is, of course, Xanathar, who the player must defeat to beat the game. It's a big boss at the end of the game. As a quick aside, this game, along with its two sequels, plus a whole slew of other really fun D&D games that were released under the Gold Box brand, are available for to play on modern PCs on GOG, and they were just recently also released on Steam. So if you're into that old school style of game, if you're into D&D type stuff, which obviously you're listening to this, so you are, definitely check them out. They're definitely worth a few bucks. Okay, so two stories exist. One, this Shakespearean power coup between two eye tyrants, both hungry for power and knowledge, but one just a little more devious than the other. And the other, a relatively by-the-numbers adventure where a group of heroes destroy a monster in what amounts to a dungeon. And then there is a third story that this one is directly tied to Kato Keskai. It states that Kato Keskai was killed by a lich named Avarin. And so, you know, the first story, the first legend is tells how Xanathar, the original, was assassinated by another beholder. The third legend tells of how Xanathar, aka Kato Keskai, aka the Eye, was killed by an archlich named Avanir. It's that middle legend that is the plot of the Eye of the Beholder video game that kind of muddles up the waters, and we're not sure if it's supposed to be the original Xanathar or if it's supposed to be the Eye who has taken up the mantle of the Xanathar. So which is canon? It's hard to say, but if I may offer up my own theory, why can't they all be true? So follow me here. So Kato Keskai, or the Eye, has his eye, but I'm set on taking over the Waterdeep Thieves Guild and expanding his own slaving ring, his own slaving trade. Discovers that the leader is none other than another beholder. And then rather than taking the risks involved in a direct full frontal assault, the Eye uses indirect influence as well as his minions to convince the Lords of Waterdeep of a terror in the sewers beneath them. They in turn employ a group of heroes to essentially do the Eye's dirty work. That is the plot of the Eye of the Beholder. And in the Eye's opinion, the less beholders around, the better. You know, Eye tyrants are a devious, traitorous lot, after all. So he kills Uth himself and simply lies, stating that the lesser beholder was killed by Xanathar before the Eye was able to finish off the Thieves Guild leader himself. So is any of this true? Who can say? But it makes sense from a character point of view. It makes sense the Eye would pull strings and orchestrate machinations, which would bring about a rival's death, all without doing anything physical himself, only to later embellish the story to state that he was directly responsible for Xanathar's death. And of course, it ties the two seemingly incongruous stories together in what I feel is a satisfying way, as well as allowing the third legend of Kato Keskai being killed by Avenir to also make sense within the timeline. Because there is some precedence for the beholder in the Eye of the Beholder game being in fact Kato Keskai, having already supplanted Xanathar as leader of the Thieves Guild. This timeline in which the Eye kills the original Xanathar and is then killed by the heroes of Waterdeep, as seen in Eye of the Beholder, is actually included in issue 206 of Dungeon Magazine. The problem with this is that just 6 issues prior to that in Dungeon 200, there is an article, an in-depth history of Skullport, which states that the Eye was killed by Avarine. And so, like I said, the sort of headcanon that I've proposed really kind of ties them all together. There are a little bit of loose ends, but you know, it really, I feel, works in a way that makes sense and is logical. So, I mean, I guess that's what we get when we let beholders start running things and using the same name. It gets pretty confusing. But what's not confusing is what comes after. So that aforementioned article from Dungeon 206 goes on to state, over the years, many beholders have likewise claimed the title of Xanathar, some after killing their predecessors and some in a peaceful transition. Exactly what many is defined as numerically is unknown, but the Waterdeep Dragon Heist adventure points to the number possibly being 14. Within the current Xanathar, who we will speak of momentarily, within its lair is a room known as the Crypt of Xanathar's Past. 4 beholders are preserved in embalming fluid, hanging from the ceiling. 9 urns are positioned in front of murals of beholders, and one of the walls is carved to display a scowling beholder flanked by 2 hooded wizards. So is the number 14? Have there been 14 previous Xanathars and we are on number 15? Well, much like the timeline and the actual fates of the original Xanathar and his first successor, beholders' penchant for lying and secrecy really put this lorecaster at a disadvantage. It's hard to suss out what is the truth and what is fantasy. What we do know are a couple of names such as Zandul's Rithral, who, according to that same dungeon article, quote, chose to retire from the role rather than continue to live as a target. So pretty wise, in my opinion. Another name that we know is that of Izulchur, who is the most recent beholder to step down as a Xanathar and really only held the title for a brief period. Again, from the article, originally part of a beholder cluster working alongside 4 others of its race, After becoming the Xanathar, Izuktur continued to communicate magically with the other members of its cluster, sharing reports on its progress and the state of affairs in Waterdeep. This didn't last long, as the Beholder grew tired and restless, not willing to stay in the sewer lair for days, months, or even years at a time like the original Xanathar. Izuktur decided to step down and had its cluster send a replacement. That replacement is known as Zushex, the current Xanathar. From the article again, Zushex spent much of its first year as Xanathar reading through the vast library amassed by its predecessors. Exposure to so much information drove its thirst for more knowledge. The article goes on to describe the new Xanathar as young and ambitious, but way more impulsive than the previous Xanathars, as it's more willing to take chances to increase its power. It seems to me like Zushex is more so Kidu Keskai's heir than any previous Xanathar that came between them. So what else do we know about the new Xanathar? The Xanathar factors heavily into the Dragon Heist adventure, which is a level 1-5 shindig. So definitely check it out if you're interested in having the Xanathar, aka Zushex, as a big bad in your campaign. The adventure does have this to say about Waterdeep's most notorious beholder. The only creature Xanathar truly cares about aside from itself is a fish named Silgar that it keeps in a large glass tank. All right, so nothing new. We learned about that at the beginning of the show, about the goldfish named Silgar. It's this, though. It's this other detail that has me laughing. Xanathar has minions that look after the fish constantly, but even their ministrations can't keep such a creature alive forever. Whenever the fish dies, panic spreads through the occupants of the lair as minions try to replace the fish before Xanathar realizes what has happened. Luckily for them, the beholder can't tell one fish from another. So some real 80s sitcom energy there with the fish dying and the minions trying to replace it before dad gets home. So there we go. That's the Xanathar. That is information on the original Xanathar, the beholder actually named Xanathar, and all the beholders who have taken the title of Xanathar after him. Which brings us to the end of the show and, of course, our magic item of the week. I wanted to keep with the theme, the idea that knowledge is power. Like, that's what these beholders as leaders of the Thieves Guild value more than anything, is knowledge, is information. And so in keeping with that idea, I want to introduce a magic item known as the Ring of Secrets. Now, on first glance, first impression, this ring doesn't appear to be anything other than an ordinary gold band, perhaps a wedding band of sorts. However, this magic item will allow its wearer to learn somebody else's deepest, darkest secret, the kind of secret that person would like to take to their grave. Now, the way it works is somebody wears the Ring of Secrets and makes physical contact with a person, whether it be a handshake or a hug or even a pat on the back. And once that physical contact is initiated, the wearer of the Ring of Secrets learns that other person's deepest, darkest secret. Think of it like in Unbreakable, when Bruce Willis touches people and learns that the evil that they've done. It works exactly like that. However, it only has 3 charges before it does in fact become an ordinary gold band. So the wearer must be careful in what situations to use it and what situations to not use it, and how to use that information once they do have it. The Ring of Secrets is an item that I feel could definitely help a party that might have failed a few intimidation checks or persuasion checks, may have failed to get information in a more traditional way. So it may act as a bit of a golden gun for the DM to introduce to the players, or it could be used as something that aid when they're confronting a villain like the Xanathar, who values information more than anything, rather than, you know, getting killed by the beholder and his minions. The players can offer up a piece of information or offer to get a piece of information to save their lives. So there you have it, the Ring of Secrets. Let me know if you use it in an adventure, in a campaign. I'd love to hear about it. You can talk to us about it on the Dungeons & Dragons text channel in the Robots Radio Network Discord. And of course, if you want to hear more from me, you can listen to Fandom University, which is another podcast I co-host with my best friend and author, Sean Hamill. They are multi-episode arcs that deep dive into various nerdy topics. We're currently on hiatus or in between seasons, but we've got an entire season worth of episodes where we talk about the Alien movies. We talk about the comic book writer, Grant Morrison. We talk about Resident Evil. A lot of cool stuff if you're interested. Also, Crit, he's got a gaggle of shows, including Fumbling Four and The Almighty Crit, which is in its second season, as well as Call of Cthulhu Mythos Mysteries, a Call of Cthulhu 7th edition live playcast. There's also Cyberpunked, which is their Cyberpunk Red live playcast, as well as Delta Green SCP Files, which is their Delta Green live playcast, and their Knights of Darkness, which is their World of Darkness live playcast. This season, they're doing Vampire the Masquerade. And additionally, they've got two different lore casts, including the Legend of Zelda lore cast, which is a look at all things that Zelda and Link from NES all the way to Switch. And in particular, I want to give a shout out to their Resident Evil lore cast, which is celebrating over 50,000 downloads. So thank you to all the fans of the Resident Evil lore cast listening to that. If you're interested in that game and that franchise, definitely give it a look. It's popular for a reason. It's good stuff. Well, with that being said, thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week with some more D&D lore. And until then, may all your 20s be natural.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at Robots Radio.com.